prime in G such that G prime is equal to GH for some H in H. Right. So you take each element of H and you multiply it, by some G, and you get this code set. So you have the same number of elements in this set as you have elements in the subgroup H.
Okay, I'm going to be talking about this
but
more today.
Does this give us the fiber bundle, or?
Yeah, because this acts like a projection. All right. Essentially, the picture is you've got your group G as some manifold. You take some element here, and you multiply it by every element of some subgroup of G. Well, what that does is, you know, sweep out something that looks like a copy of H, but, you know, if you chose the identity group here, the identity element, and multiplied it by H, this actually is H, right? And this looks just like a copy of that translated over by multiplying by G, multiply everything by G, and you ought to get over to that. So what you're doing is you're dividing G up into a whole bunch of non-intersecting copies of H. And if you pick one point from each of these, it turns out, all right, that's this collection. Right, picking one point off each of those in a smooth way is a manifold. And at each point of that manifold, you've got a copy of H.
So all such lines have to, all such GH have to be continuous. For the
they will be because H is.
Okay.
Right. So you're multiplying by, you know, this, you know, you've got some real parameters here, you know, y1 through yk. Just let those vary smoothly, and we know H varies smoothly because it's a Lie subgroup. So H is a Lie group, too.
So we know that these are infinitely differentiable, or just somewhat differentiable?
You know, they usually are. But what we've really said is they're continuous. But yeah, we'd probably like to differentiate these things. You know, if you're talking about something like the orthogonal group, you know, and in fact, these things turn out to be homogeneous spaces, so yeah, they're very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
I was just going to say, so we kind of choose and construct them to be differentiable so we can do what we need to.
Well, we've classified the Lie groups, so we actually know a lot more about any specific case than this general construction. You know, you can take the orthogonal group and take a quotient by some smaller orthogonal group and just figure out what it is, and it's nice. You know, if you take the quotient of if you take the quotient of SO3 by one of the rotations, I think what you get is the two-sphere. Maybe we could check that. SO3 probably has some identifications, but it's something that looks but like the two-sphere, but probably with some points identified. But it's a reasonably nice space you get. So, when we're taking quotients of Lie groups, we're going to end up with some nice manifolds, for the most part. But it depends which ones you take a quotient of, exactly what you get. I don't think we've talked about the quotient groups with everybody here yet, so we should probably back up and do that.
That was at the beginning of class.
Oh, okay. Well,
so there's a different G for every one of those lines?
Yeah.
G is essentially a
Right. Well, one of the things I'll prove today is that these lines don't intersect. Right.
You can choose so, G, the MEG.
You can take any G on any one. Basically, that's a gauge choice. Now, doing it in a smooth way, so if you choose a certain G here, you choose a nearby G on the next one over. So if we choose, you know, some smooth, make some smooth choice of one G off each of those fibers, you know, that's cross-section. That's called cross-section of the bundle. And anything you do on any cross-section is equivalent to, you know, we could take the cross-section through the identity, say. And there's a projection to one copy. Doing something on any cross-section, we'll build tools that make that equivalent to doing it on that base manifold. Which lets, what you're doing is building things that are fields on manifolds in a way that will be independent of how you move up and down those fibers. So you have a local group symmetry that leaves certain properties unchanged. And so that's what we're constructing, are fields that don't care which cross-section you work on, they'll give you the same result.
So that you can choose your groups that as long as it's smooth, you can have different, direct, say, a different rotation at each point, as long as you change it smoothly.
Yeah. So H could be a rotation group. Right. So, well, an example that we'll probably come back to again and again is general relativity, where this the state space is Minkowski space, and those fibers are the Lorentz group, and we're going to choose local Lorentz transformations at each point. That gives us any basis we want to use for vectors in Minkowski space. And then if we want, we can add additional structure that curves that manifold, so we get a curved spacetime instead of just flat Minkowski space. So we'll do examples all the way through. I think to give you guys a problem with what we've talked about so far with Lie groups, but we're getting to a point where we're slowly starting to build some results that will give us these fiber bundles and let us start talking about gauge theory.
Which part of that structure is the fiber bundle?
The whole thing. This thing. So the whole group G with the quotient structure gives us a fiber bundle, a principal fiber bundle.
There's group fibers, those numbers, each quotient group.
Each one has a fiber bundle.
No. Careful with terminology. A quotient group is a special case. We'll talk about that maybe today. This is what I was talking about at the end last time, where if H is a normal subgroup of G, then this quotient actually is a group. That's called the quotient group. And that's a case of some interest. So let me put an overview up again. This fits in a little bit down today's lecture. Oh, go ahead. This is really right on what I want to be talking about today. So we'll flesh this out quite a bit.
What's the in parentheses by the H? That's what
Big H is a Lie group, so we have a bunch of real parameters, say Y1 through YK. Since it's a Lie group, it's also a manifold, so we have a chart, so we can label the group elements by, if it's a K-dimensional Lie group, then K real parameters. Today you'll give me your homework on differential forms. You all understand that perfectly.
I just feel like there are a lot of
miles going on behind me. Okay, it was very quiet all of a sudden. You do have homework to turn in today, don't you? Yeah, good. I'll expect to see a stack on my desk there before we're done. Okay, and now we've been doing lead groups. This is flat out a tool. You know, we don't have to use differential forms, but these things look nicer if they're a tool that we can use anytime we want to. Things just are simpler. You don't have to write down as many symbols on the board. Lead groups are a little more than a tool for us. A lead group is really the environment that we're going to turn into a fiber bundle and eventually turn into a curved manifold with local symmetry. So our case theories are going to live inside these things. They start life inside one of these things, but then we generalize away from something that's just a lead group. There will be lead subgroups in the final picture, but the lead group we start with becomes that fiber bundle. But this is much more central to the structures we're going to do. We started off with examples. We've started general results. And in particular, what did we show? We showed that a lead group G gives rise to a Lie algebra call that curly L or should we call it V? Let's call it V because it is a vector space with a basis given by the infinitesimal generators. So we can symbolize this by saying that J gives us the Lie algebra. So that's one result. It's natural to ask whether we can go the other way. Does V give us G back?
The answer is
not necessarily. Yeah, somewhere between not necessarily and sort of. Let's say sort of. What happens is V gives us G prime, and
G prime is a Cousin group.
G prime is the covering group. So G is G prime mod a discrete subgroup. Okay, that's really the theorem we'll get. So let's look at that a bit today. Not totally positive what I'll prove of that claim. We'll see what we can do with it. What we need to do to make sense of this, of the full statement, is to define a quotient group. So we'll define a quotient group. We're going to be interested in, three different sorts of quotient group. So we need quotients. know, G mod H, where H is a subgroup of G. Then later, you know, we'll probably spend a good deal of time today talking about these quotients and what we get.
Is that G equals G prime over G or G prime?
Oh, thank you, G prime. Yeah, thanks. Exactly right. Let's see. This is probably not too hard. Let's start with a Lie algebra. Let me finish where we're going. Let's see. We're going to end up with fiber bundles. So when H is a Lie subgroup, we can get a fiber bundle. We're gonna curve those fiber bundles. And that's our gauge theory. So understanding these quotients is gonna be really right at the center of this construction.
So a couple lines behind it.
Mm-hmm.
What is D our Lie algebra?
No. D is a discrete subgroup of G prime. So
how would you write that?
Roughly today we're going to be looking at this.
How would you write the discrete subgroup of?
I substitute D here and say discrete in there.
Oh, there's a
well,
you
know,
just say it's contained by it, or
you know, if you know what you mean by it, you can certainly write D is contained in G prime, but that's a subset notation. It doesn't really say it was a subgroup.
Evident.
You know, you can take lots of subsets of a manifold that aren't anything at all, except a bunch of points. we could invent some notation. I don't know. I can't think of any notation that's standard that says this is a subgroup of that, short of just writing it out. But let's see if we can define group quotient. So, as I say, we're working through this part here today. We'll see where we get. I'm going to treat three cases. Let G be a group and H, a Lie group. The quotient of G I H subgroup. Here, let's just put a G under the subset, and that means subgroup.
All right.
Okay.
And forever shall be.
Okay. So we'll just use that. If anybody in your reading the literature and all this sees some standard symbol, we can switch over to that. But in the meantime, this will do fine. Okay. Now, let's see. What we want to define are codesets. So first, the coset, and this will be a left coset. You can do the same stuff on the right, but the left coset of coset, and I'm going to call it little g, big H, is little g H is the set of all elements of the big group such that there exists an element H in the subgroup such that G prime equals G times that H. So these are objects that we're going to play with a lot, these codesets. Okay, so is it clear what that means? Nah. Let's try it and see. Anybody got a favorite group yet? Let's try an example. What's your favorite group, Joe?
SL2C, of course.
SL2C. Oh, there's a good one. SL2C. Yeah. That's a good favorite group. It's a hard example. Choose a littler one. Let's do SO3 or something. Let's see. How can we take a quotient? Let's see. What's a subgroup? Oh, well. Okay. I mean, we could figure it out. You know, we know a subgroup of SL2C is just the rotations, right? So that's kind of. Shall we try it? Let's see what we get. I don't know what.
Then let's do an easier group.
I'm trying to think what we get. I mean, you know, we're going to. Let's see. Let's look at SU2 and SO3. Because I really want to do the discrete case first anyway. Let's look at SU2.
So, this is an example.
Just an example of a code set. SO3 is easy. Right? We have rotations about. Let me say it right. In x, y, y, z, or zx planes. Remember, we think of rotations as being something that happens in a plane, not something that happens around an axis. So we've got these three rotations. And rotations. SO2 rotations about I'm saying it wrong rotations in the XY plane are a subgroup. What's that?
I'll think about that. Yeah, you too.
So we can write SO2 is a subgroup of SO3. seems pretty clear. So, let's see, how are we going to do this, though? What we want to do is, let's see, we found, G is an element of SO3, means we can write it as the exponential of some, what do we find, theta n hat dot j, where j are those three anti-symmetric 3x3 matrices. So we could write a general element that way.
Was there more to that one? Oh, okay. I'm thinking.
Yeah, so three parameters. You know, we've got an angle of rotation about some direction. And, alright, so, you know, that's an element of SO3. Then, elements of SO2 are things like just rotations around. So what do we have to choose here? We've got to choose n to be in the k hat direction, so we just get j sub z here. That's the one that generates the rotations in the x, y plane. So what we want to do is look at the set, so that the coset, let's pick a G, and let's see then, what is it? G is going to be, you could take the identity, that would be easy, but let's pick some other point. What's a nice G? Something generic but simple, I suppose.
Rotated by pi. Sure.
So the exponential of rotation by pi around some direction could be. Or let's just choose some phi. It holds phi fixed. And then let's choose J to be anything but the z direction. So, you know, maybe rotate a little bit around the x direction. There's an element. So with the x axis, so g is a rotation by phi naught of the y z plane. Then the coset, I'll call this g zero, so we're not talking about a general one. The coset of g naught, with respect to H, is the set of all G prime in SO3 such that G prime equals G naught H for some H in, this is SO2. Okay, well, those are easy to find because we know all the H's and we know G naught. So G prime is anything of the form G naught is e to the phi naught jx, and H is anything of this form, e to the theta jz, for theta 0 to 2 pi. So, any rotation of the xy plane of that original element. Well, what are we going to get? I suppose we could just work that out. Anybody have that general formula we derived for rotation? All right, so G0H is the set of all of these. So I can say equals the set of all things like this, such that theta lies in that range. So just keep the equality going there. We just have to figure out what those are.
Okay,
it probably looks like a circle, right?
Can't you just find one at a time and just go, all right, we're in this.
Let's see. So what kind of objects are these? These are some matrices, right?
Yeah. is, but they're going to be rotations too, aren't they? Because of the way we...
Yeah, these are certain rotation matrices.
Right.
Yeah, and we derived a general form for rotation matrices, so we could...
It's just going to be a circle that's tilted by phi naught, though.
Ah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we can draw the picture. Good. So here's our x, y, z. So this is going to be rotation. If we just look at all of these, those are rotations of the x, y plane, and then this is a rotation in the y, z plane. So it's something that tips it up. What's that? You find it?
No, wherever it goes.
So it's like you tip that circle up by an angle phi naught. So, but okay, now you've got to be careful here though, because what we've just drawn is the effect of this rotation operator on a vector in R3. It's not the group element. The group element, this is some matrix.
Right.
All right, this is some set of, some one parameter family of matrices. And so it's not that circle. It's some,
the matrix,
some other.
That to it. So it's going to be.
Yeah, you might be able to read it off.
It's going to be the rotation about the normal set circle. The matrix that does a rotation about the normal set circle will cover that.
Yeah. That's right.
The tilted.
That angle is going to be phi naught. So, rotations around that axis. Alright, so what is that? That's an n hat. Alright, it lies in the xy plane, so it's going to be k hat cos phi naught plus j hat sine phi naught. It's going to be a unit vector in that direction. And so what we really expect the g primes to be are rotations around that n hat. So we'll have rotation by theta. It might not be exactly the same theta as that. It's going to be that theta times, sines and cosines of this phi naught or something. So it's probably a different parameterization. But then we have this n, let's call it n naught dot j. So we get, we're going to get those rotations. Does that clear to everybody? You see how it works? Surely that's what G prime does. If you just think of G prime as acting on a vector in R3, and the e to the theta jz does some rotation of it in the xy plane, then after we do that, we're going to tip up by phi naught. Let's see. So is it right?
Yes.
All right. So I'm thinking, what if we start with some vector like that? There's a vector. What are we going to do? We're going to rotate it around the xy plane by some. By some theta. So, that angle around there projects down to an angle theta. Now we're going to rotate that in the around the yz plane. Right. It's not quite obvious to me at this point that what we've done is rotate around that axis. Let's work it out. Joe, did you find the general formula we had?
No.
We had that thing with sines and cosines of psi.
Well, it's
going to
be a revision translation. Let me make it like this.
Let's just find the matrix. You see it, Nathan? Does it?
Are you writing out sequence though?
Well, I'm imagining applying this one. It's clear what that does, and then apply this one. Mm-hmm. And so for some vector, we can figure out what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the way to do it. Yeah. Apply it to each of the three basis vectors, and then. We'll just read off the coefficients in the matrix. Let's try that. So, if we do G prime on I hat, what are we doing? I probably need a better picture. Did you get this?
Yes.
Okay. Let me try this picture again. With a marker that works. So, there's X, Y, Z. So we're taking a unit vector here. Now we're going to rotate it around, that'll say in the XY plane, we're going to rotate by an angle theta. So the first transformation takes I hat to I hat cos theta plus J hat sine theta. Then we're going to rotate in the YZ plane. Well, the I hat part is going to stay fixed. The J hat part is going to be rotated by phi. So the second transformation here, see you later, rotates this, so it leaves that part alone, and then we have a piece in the J hat direction. J hat is going to rotate by, you know, up here by some phi naught. We've got this overall amplitude, and then J hat will rotate into J hat cosine phi, let's see, depending on the direction we're rotating here. That was right handed. We'll suppose that's right. Plus, then we get a K hat sine phi naught. Oh, I like this. Why not? So that's the result of that rotation. So if we think of G prime acting on I hat as some matrix, okay, it's a 3x3 matrix. We just acted on a unit vector in the X direction, and what we get is that vector. So the first column of this has to be what we read off of that, cos theta, then sine theta cos phi, phi naught, and sine theta, sine phi naught. And now we've just got two more unit vectors to rotate, and we'll get the whole thing.
Is that going to give us any trouble that you can reach Y with X?
So if we take theta to be pi over 2, that component goes to 0. Fine. Those go to 1. You know, it's still some transformation. So
I was talking about getting three independent parameters to make a matrix out of, but you're right. They're independent.
Yeah.
Seeing since you can use this thing to make Y, wouldn't that be a redundant set of parameters? I don't know.
I don't see why it would. Let's see. A redundant set of parameters.
Well, you're doing Y twice. If you think about a general theta.
Yeah, it's
covering the same plane twice. If you think general theta with Y, I don't know if it matters. It probably doesn't.
It should be the case that no matter what we apply this to, what we get is essentially a copy of H. Okay. So we should get something that is in one-to-one correspondence with H here, with SO2 in this case. I think that's what the theorem tells us. But let's go ahead and finish writing this matrix. So we have the finite transformation around Jx acting on... Okay, so if we rotate J in the xy plane, all right, now we're starting here and we're going to rotate back by phi. So J hat is going to go to minus I hat sine theta plus J hat cos theta. And then the rotation of the yz plane once again ignores the I hat piece and rotates the J hat just like it did before. So what we're going to get is minus I hat sine theta. Then we have a cos theta. And the J hat is going to give J hat cos phi naught plus J hat sine phi naught. So the second column is going to be minus sine theta cos theta cos phi naught and cos theta sine phi naught. Then G prime acting on K hat is e to the phi naught JX. Alright, now what happens to K hat when we rotate in the XY plane is exactly nothing. So we just have K hat here. And now we rotate that in the phi naught direction, so the Y part is going negative. So we're going to have K hat cosine phi naught minus J hat sine phi naught. That would be the rotation back by phi naught. So the third column will be 0 minus sine phi naught cos phi naught. So we found the cos theta. So our claim is that G naught H is the set of all matrices, cos theta, sine theta, cos phi naught. Sine theta, sine phi naught, then minus sine theta, cos theta, cos phi naught, cos theta, sine phi naught, 0, minus sine phi naught, sorry about that, and cos phi naught. That ought to be, you know, well, for any choice of phi naught, that is a cos theta. You know, well, what does that look like? It's not immediately illuminating.
Kind of take whatever you have, put a point at the axis, and keep it equidistant, each point equidistant from that axis, and rotate it. Does that make sense?
Do you see what the axis is?
The axis is going to be zero. You're going to have a zero axis. You can rotate it one direction around that zero, and then the whole thing's going to rotate around it, so it's going to stay the same distance.
All right. We're talking about a group. So a product of group elements is another group element. So we know that G prime has to be equal to the exponential of some angle, some unit vector dot j. So we know that we can write it in that form. from this form of the group element, it's not obvious to me how I would identify either alpha or m hat. But could we do that? You know, in principle, we can find those. Then, what is it? Well, let's see. I guess the question is, how do alpha and m depend on theta? Phi naught is just some constant. But as we vary theta, what happens to alpha and m? You know, we could be rotating by varying angles around a varying direction. And so inside the group, it's not totally obvious where this is going to lie until we figure out what those two are, what their dependence on theta is. Now, as preface to this, we should think about what SO3 looks like. What does SO3 look like? The way to answer the question is to look at the parameterization. We can parameterize any element of SO3 by an angle and a unit vector. Okay, so here's a way to think about it. Think about the unit vector, okay, that gives a sphere. Alright, so any point on a sphere. Now, think of the angle of rotation as a radius for that sphere. So, you know, consider all vectors alpha m hat. You know, what do you get? Well, the m hat gives you the sphere as you vary it over all possible unit vectors. The alpha ranges from 0 out to 2 pi. And a rotation by 2 pi always comes back to where you started. So, let's see. Actually, we should only go out to pi, I think. Is that right, Juan? Do you remember? Going in the m-hat direction by pi is the same as going in the
opposite direction.
Minus m-hat direction by probably minus pi. Those will be the same rotation. So once you get out to a radius of pi, you've covered all possible rotations, and in fact, the opposite points are identified. So what you've built is a ball, a solid ball from the origin out to radius pi, such that every point in the interior of the ball is a group element, and every point on the surface except the opposite points are identified. So let's note that. SO3 is topologically as a manifold, right? A ball, a three-dimensional ball of radius pi with opposite points identified. A rotation around m hat by an angle alpha. If we look at the opposite direction, minus m hat, and rotate around that by minus alpha, we've done the same thing. You can see that. So in XYZ space, we've got a solid ball with a point here and a point over on the opposite side identified. Now, this is not a simply connected space. All right, because if you imagine, simply connected, path connected means if I draw any closed curve in the space, I can contract it smoothly to a point just by continuously varying parameters. However, if I have a curve that starts at that point and reaches the opposite point, that's a closed curve because those two points are identified. And the problem is if I shift this point up to try and close that loop, this point runs away from it because it has the identified points are always opposite. So I can never move that loop around so that it shrinks to a point. So this is a topologically non-trivial space. It's multiply connected. It's maybe not simply path connected.
How many parts of it have?
How many parts?
Well, it's just got one part.
Right.
It's just that you've pasted it together in a really weird way. SU2 sorts this out. We'll do the same thing for SU2, but because you've got that e to the phi over 2, that half angle up there, you have to come twice as far out before you've exhausted all possible SU2 transformations. And what we find is that all points on the exterior are the same point, and you can shrink things to zero. So you go around by 4 pi in SU2, and or from minus 2 pi to plus 2 pi, and you find that no matter what axis you've chosen, you've done the same rotation. So all points on the surface of the ball representing SU2 are the same point, and so you can't construct these loops that you can't shrink. And so SU2 is a simply connected manifold. Okay, so what we're really... Yeah, Jay?
I'm still somewhere between this picture and this picture. I'm still slightly lost. Did we jump to what it does on its
own? We jumped to talking about what manifold SO3 actually is. Because we want to draw a picture of the coset. Well, the picture of the coset is some... It's some... probably topologically a circle lying inside this ball somewhere.
Right.
Okay. Right. Okay. Described by that. But now we've drawn the ball.
So you draw the ball. Oh, so all of SO3, not just this.
That's right. Ball, right. That ball is right. All
okay,
of
I was going to say, because this thing just sweeps yeah, out. And yeah. if you identify phi and theta, it'll sweep out a sphere, and
yeah.
You can choose phi and theta. Okay.
Yeah. That's why examples are so important, because, you know, what... It's so easy to get mixed up between the space that the group acts on and the manifold that is the group itself.
Okay.
Right? The Lorentz group, it's some six-dimensional manifold. You know, it's not space-time. It acts on space-time, but it's some six-dimensional space. We'll figure out what sometime. You know, it's SO3 together with three other things you can do. You know, not immediately obvious. We've got a parameterization for it. We can figure it out. Booths run over all values, though, right? You can that hyperbolic angle psi runs from zero to infinity. That's arc length along a hyperbola. So you have some dimensions that are, you know, like an open three space, perhaps. I mean, you know, we could check and see, but. It's probably not something that fits tightly, you know, in a picture like that. And it's going to be hard to draw to the sixth dimension. We could look at the, the Lorentz group with fewer dimensions. Except the Lorentz group, in one space and one time, you don't really have any rotations. You've just got the one hyperbolic thing, so it's probably just a real line. Yeah.
I don't understand how this could be a three ball. I thought that if the radius is fixed at pi, then it's a two-dimensional surface.
The radius, true, but the radius. Oh, the radius of the ball is pi, but the radius corresponding to a given group element is alpha.
Oh, okay, so it's...
Right. So the biggest alpha runs from minus pi to plus pi. So the biggest alpha gets is out on the surface here. But there are alphas all the way in between.
Oh, okay. And it includes zero.
Yeah, yeah, zero's in there. Yeah, zero's the identity, right? No angle, you know, any direction you want, e to the zero is one, that's our identity element.
Okay.
So identity sitting right in the middle, that's nice. You know, good choice.
You think about it that way.
Yeah.
At any given time, we're only talking about these two points on opposite sides. So they're not simply connected.
No, the two points are the same.
Oh, wait.
Are the same.
Yeah, those two are identified. You know, it's like making a cylinder out of a rectangle. We can, you know, that rectangle is a cylinder if I identify that line with that line.
Right. And that identification, I think, comes back here from the fact that you've got a phi and a theta that commute, but should, or if that makes sense, you can do those in either order. Well, you can't.
No, we can't.
Because
they don't commute.
You can't do those in either order. But when you put them together, you get.
Well, yeah. See, it's far from obvious to me what subset of that ball that matrix is. This is a one-dimensional subset of that ball. We'd like to figure out which.
Oh, I hope not.
I hope it looks something like a circle.
Okay. No. That's up to the half circle, I think.
You know what? In fact, let's see. What's the identity going to do? The identity should be easy. So if phi naught is zero, then G prime is just the set of rotations of the xy plane. What do rotations of the xy plane look like here? Well, the unit vector is the z direction, so we're going to get the z axis. Perfect.
Yeah, we're going to get.
So that circle right there is the coset of the identity.
It's going to look something like a donut. Around.
Right. I think the others are going to loop around
exactly.
That.
Oh, like a
yeah. 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 So we have a bunch of circles around.
We've got like so much more.
It's not like watch sort of or not watch, but like.
Because I was looking through this, like this going to what it does on a general vector is it can rotate it around this direction. So you've got this width here, and then it goes around in a circle. So it's going to sweep out sort of a donut shape almost, or well, half of the donut shape with the inside cut out. So it's just the top of the arc. And it stops at two points, depending on what vector you choose. And then you choose all vectors.
Well, I'm a little worried about the surface points, where they're going to... You know, how do we cover this with circles in such a way that we get every point, and each of our circles, each subset is a circle.
Is it going to be straight lines through the center?
No, they can't intersect. So I'm far from seeing exactly what these are. Let's figure it out, shall we?
Yeah.
let's just work it out. So we know that these things can be written this way. So here's the goal. We want to find alpha of theta and m of theta. So g prime is equal to e to the alpha m hat dot j is equal to e to the phi naught jx e to the theta jz. Okay. I want the general formula. What was that general form we got? Do you have it in your notes?
I'm sure I've got it.
Rate. Have a rate. you know, if we have that general formula, I think we can compare to this, and we might be able to get it more easily.
The one-dimensional.
Yeah, let's see. So we have.
Oh, it's not a bit older.
Wait a second. Here's the way to do it. This matrix. All right, so we have cos theta minus sine theta. This has got to have a zero eigenvector. That's the axis. Yeah. Let's try that. So, sine theta cosine naught cos theta cos phi naught minus sine phi naught sine theta sine phi naught cos theta sine phi naught cos phi naught. All right, on A, B, C, there's some vector, this, you know, any vector along the axis. So any, this could be a unit vector. So the normalization of this vector is arbitrary, but it's got to give zero. So A cos theta minus B sine theta has to be zero.
So A
A sine theta cos phi naught plus B cos theta cos phi naught minus C sine phi naught equals zero. A sine theta sine phi naught plus B cos theta sine phi naught plus B cos phi naught equals zero. Okay, quick, what's the solution? So, if I multiply this by cos phi naught and multiply this one by sine phi naught and add, then here I get a cos squared, there I get a sine squared, and I get A sine theta plus B cos theta equals zero.
Did I do it right? Is that true? Well, A cos theta minus B sine theta.
Yeah, so we also have, let's see, we have A is B tan theta. So if I put these two together, what do we get? A sine theta, is this going to help? And
you're missing something, actually, aren't you?
What's that?
The last piece is C sine phi naught, or C sine phi minus C sine phi on the top piece. And then it's plus C.
Got a zero here. So there's no C in there on the top line.
Okay. More than just the bottom two, though.
What's that?
Second and third line. Isn't that when you put the cosine to get sine squared cosine squared?
Let's see. I multiplied this equation by sine phi naught.
Right.
So I get sine phi naught squared on each of these and a sine cos here.
Sine cos.
I multiply this by cos phi naught.
Oh,
so
you get a
cos squared and a minus.
Okay.
So when I add these two, those drop out.
I was a little lost on the
And then here, I have the same thing here, so I'm getting cos squared plus sine squared on each of those, so I'm left with just this.
Yeah, you're right.
I think. This is looking fairly weird. B sine theta tan theta.
I don't think it's going to have.
Plus B cos theta has to be zero. That seems weird. That's sine squared theta over cos theta plus cos theta equals zero. So that's 1 over cos squared theta equals zero. That's not true unless B equals zero. This isn't working very well.
You've got...
What's wrong?
Well, that matrix is not going to have... The only way you're going to get a vector that gives you zero like that is if that matrix has a null state. That matrix.
Well, it does, because it's... let's see, for any given theta, you know, it has to be just some rotation. And that rotation leaves the axis unchanged.
Two rows need to be dependent, and that's how you're going to do it, is to find which rows are dependent. And one row has to be dependent on the other two. That's the only way you're going to get zero out of
that. That's wrong. If B is zero, A is zero, But if both of those are zero, then I don't get zero less theta zero. I'm only getting the zero vector. So something's wrong. Did we compute these matrix elements wrong? I don't see what the problem is. I mean, it doesn't work.
With those matrix elements, there's not going to be an answer to that.
Yeah, what's the general formula?
What's
going on here? So the general rotation is what?
I have the identity and the cosine of theta. Minus n I of n j down.
N I and J.
Right.
Yeah.
Cosine theta.
Sine theta.
Cosine. And cosine for slope.
Oh, cos theta.
Yeah, and cosine for slope.
Oh, okay.
The last one will be sine theta. There's three terms.
So is that cos theta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then plus N hat by J hat sine theta.
J vector sine theta?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, let's see. So we should be able to call this alpha. That's the angle, and call this M. So let's see. Yeah, if we could find M, that would give us a way to find alpha pretty quickly. I don't see where we're going wrong finding M. We can check the eigenvalues, but if we've calculated that rotation matrix correctly, then it has to be, it has to have an axis, right? So a rotation always leaves some direction unchanged. So why doesn't this have a solution? So we got it wrong?
Yeah.
Where did we get it wrong?
Well, I'm looking through and I don't think that's a rotation. I've been trying to find a way to make any two rows or columns cancel, and they don't. At least not the way that I can see.
Well, the way to check that it's a rotation is to see whether its transpose is its inverse.
Let's
check that. Yeah, if it goes awry, it'll probably give us some clue as to where we've gotten off. So, cos theta, sine theta, cos, why not? I could do this as an exercise. I'm getting tired of writing this matrix. Cos theta. Cos. Why not? Somebody might just check on I hat, J hat, K hat. While I'm checking this way, that would find the error and tell us where to go if this works out. Right. So now we take the transpose. So
is it supposed to be a rotation?
It's the product of two rotations.
Right. Is it a group?
It's a group.
Yeah. Okay.
It's closed. So the product of two rotations is a
rotation.
Let's see. So I'm taking the transpose. So that becomes the first column. Let's see. Then the next we get sine theta cos. Phi naught cos theta cos phi naught. Down here we get minus sine phi naught. And then that becomes the last column. Sine theta phi naught cos theta phi naught. plus sine squared is usually 1.
Sorry.
Okay, what happens here, we get a cosine and a minus a sine cos. That was good. Here we get sine cos minus cosine. First column's good. Now here, we get a sine cos minus cosine cos. That's good. Here with that one, there's a sine squared cos squared. Sine squared theta cos squared phi naught plus cos squared theta cos squared phi naught plus that's 1, sine squared phi naught equals 1. Okay, then down here, minus sine, let's see, here we have a sine squared plus a cos squared, so we're going to get a sine cos minus sine cos is 0. Last one, sine cos minus sine cos is 0. These had to go off at this point. Let's see, sine squared, sine cos, cos squared, sine cos is a sine cos. Minus sine cos, that's 0. Finally, sine squared, cos squared, sine squared, leaves us a sine phi naught squared plus cos phi naught squared is 1. So, it's a Rotetti fission. So, there does exist an M and an alpha for each theta that makes this thing a rotation. If that matrix acts on M hat, it has to give 0, right?
It has to give M hat back. If rotation acts on an angle. That's never going to equal 0. That's
Thank you. There we go. There's the problem.
Okay, that's what I was
saying. Very confused. ABC.
That's what I was talking about, the rotation thing with the 0. I was like, does that really have to do with rotation? I wasn't actually asking if this was a rotation. I was talking about the 0 there.
Oh, there we go. Okay,
zero. Right
now.
Okay, now
so,
now we can solve it.
All right, let's try solving this again.
Okay,
so this trick still works, except we get some junk on the right side now, right?
You get a transpose if you invert it, right?
What's that?
Yeah, it's orthogonal.
I just have the same equation going the other way. Let's try, though. Okay, let's see. So, A is equal to B sine theta over...
Did you break it?
Yeah. Everybody okay out there?
The chair just broke, that's so.
Theta minus 1. They seem prone to that.
Yeah, let's
try another. Yeah, we could just put a stack of artistically piled broken chairs.
Here's a broken stack of chairs, actually.
Yeah, anybody good at welding? Is there a welding
shop
downstairs?
No, we've got a welder downstairs. It's just not hooked up. Yeah, I could weld them together. That's not good at all.
Okay. So, let's see. That trick isn't quite as efficient as I'd hoped. So, let's see.
If you do that, you add all three together, though, you'll end up with A.
Huh?
Do the trick, and then you'll end up with A cosine theta equals something, if you add all three rows together in one. Does that make sense?
I think it'll work. So, if I multiply this by cos phi naught, multiply this by sine phi naught.
Yeah.
And you want to add all three?
All three. Yeah, with A cosine equals something.
So these two are going to give A sine theta, right?
Right. So cosine. Yeah.
So we get A cos theta plus A sine theta.
So A cosine theta plus sine theta equals A, B, C. That will give us something we can work with. Okay.
I don't see it.
I don't see it because
why do I want sine theta plus cos theta?
because the second piece will cut off. Oh, wait, maybe I'm wrong. I'm lost, never mind. Don't listen to me. My brain is not working right now. We just dabbed with that.
Okay. So, let's see. If we, I can multiply these and add the last two, and I did get rid of those two terms. What does that give us? That's going to give us A sine theta, and that sum gives 1, plus B cos theta, and that sum gives 1. Those two go away, and here we get B cos phi naught plus C sine phi naught.
Oh, and now you've also got the relation between A and B.
And, yeah, we also know this. So we have an overall B times, that's going to be a sine squared now, theta, cos theta minus 1, plus cos theta equals this stuff, D cos phi naught plus D sine phi naught. I'm telling you, these things are going to look awful. Let's see, if I combine these, put this over a common denominator, I get a cos squared, oh, does this go away? Plus cos squared, oh no, minus cos theta, this just becomes a minus cos theta. Is that right? So, find a common denominator here. I get cos squared minus cosine here, so that's 1 minus cosine over cosine minus 1 is minus 1. That's just minus b. Is that right?
That's right.
I think it's right. Let me write it out just to be sure. Let's just not do anything too stupid here. Cos squared theta minus cos theta over cos theta minus 1.
You get a minus 1 on that.
And that's a 1. So 1 minus cos over cos minus 1 is minus 1. So minus b is b cos phi naught plus b sine phi naught. And that gives us all we need. C is minus b quantity, what do we have? Cos phi naught plus 1 over sine phi naught. So b and c are in constant relationship. And we know that there's an overall factor, so we can just choose b equal to anything we like, say 1, and we've got it. So, let's make it a unit vector. Oh, I shouldn't have erased that. M is, well, the lambda m, let's say, is b times sine theta over cos theta minus 1, 1 and minus 1 plus cos phi naught over sine phi naught. And we want to make it a unit vector. Well, the length norm squared of that thing is sine squared theta over cos squared cos minus sine squared. This is very nice. That doesn't do anything in particular, but choose b to be 1 over the square root of that.
Surely that would be.
Yeah, and we've got a unit vector. Yeah, you could play with trig identities here, but... Okay, what is that? That's sine squared theta over, we've got cos squared theta minus 2 cos plus 1. not doesn't necessarily do anything pretty. So there's our normalization of M. But the normalization doesn't matter so much as the direction. What's happening is the X component varies with theta. Everything else is constant. So Y and the Y and Z plane has some constant thing. So X, Y, Z. So the Y and Z components are, off here somewhere, where, that angle just depends on what that number is. But then the X component ranges from what? Well, we're normalizing by something at least as big as that. It seems to me the best we could do is range from, minus 1 to 1 or something. Well, no, that's not quite right. What does that do? If theta goes to 0, that goes to infinity. Oh, no, it doesn't. Good. So, small theta, that's going to something like... What is it doing? Small theta. We have theta minus theta cubed over 3 factorial over 1 minus theta square root of 2 factorial minus 1. So there is 1 over theta there. But then, so is it blowing up?
The cosine theta, if the theta gets smaller, it's around 0. So
this is going to minus 2 over theta. So that is blowing up. That's, but the normalization is 2. Right, so that just means it's becoming, the normalization is also blowing up. So these two are going to get killed, and as theta goes to 0, it goes to a vector in the x direction. So we're going to end up with, this is m at theta equals 0 is along the x-axis. At theta equals 0, that's what we just did. Can we make that component 0? Pi. At pi, right? We get minus 2 sine pi of 0. So this is m at pi.
Minus 2. Why do we have minus 2?
0 over minus 2 is 0.
Zero.
I'm just trying to make the x component of this vector 0. I can't do it at 0 because the denominator blows up.
Right.
It goes to 0. But I can do it when theta equals pi, the denominator is finite and the numerator goes to 0.
Isn't cosine of pi 1? No.
Minus 1.
Okay.
So they add and subtract.
Okay.
We could use some double angle formulas and simplify this, I think. But it ranges between those two, at least. And may go on the other way. Can we get I wonder if we can get minus m. Let's see, cosine would still have to be 1. Let's see, cosine is...
Yeah.
If we're approaching from the other side. Let's see. When...
Yeah, you can get the other side.
Oh, actually, we have the other side already.
Minus.
Yeah, this was negative. So, back that way is m of 0. Yeah, I wonder if it's kind of swinging up this way, if it works its way around to this side. All right, what about something intermediate? Let's see. We're always dealing with the same XYZ part. But that M, okay, if sine goes negative, so if theta is bigger than pi, then we swing into the positive part. So as theta comes around towards 2 pi, this thing is going to infinity again, but in the positive sense. So this is what happens at 2 pi. You know, I wonder if it stays in a plane. You know, if it just moves right around with that arc. That seems like a natural thing. Let's see. How would we prove it? Find a vector that's always orthogonal to that? Let's see. So if there's a fixed vector that's always orthogonal to that, but there is.
Yeah.
Right? If I let L hat be 1 plus cos 0, 1 plus cos phi naught over sine phi naught 1, that's orthogonal to all of those. So it moves in a plane. You see it?
It only covers half the plane.
Yeah, it seems like that's the extent. Because this is 2 pi and 0, that should really be the same rotation. So those two points are probably identified.
Well, they are, because they're opposite points
on
the sphere.
Yeah. Now, maybe we should be going between two points this way, plus and minus pi. That's how we identified the sphere. We kept the angle between plus and minus pi. But it's clear that we have some plane here in which M always lies. And let's see, at minus pi, it's just bound to be pointing the other way, isn't it? So it looks like we're sweeping around through that back half circle as we vary theta.
So, not for this picture,
what
would you get like
a
kind of
a distance? Yeah, so for this, yeah. So, what is this approaching? We've got, in this picture, all right, the direction is that M. So, we've got something that, let's see, if that's the XY plane, we're, We started with some M this direction, and we're ending up with one down that direction, and sort of going around the back side of the sphere. At the same time that we do some, varying angles. So, let's see, we haven't yet found alpha. But I don't think alpha is going to be constant. Yeah. Alpha. Let's see. Yeah, alpha probably varies in some way. Yeah, it needs to be the case that we're passing through the interior of the sphere, right? It's hard to see how, we can't stay on the surface, clearly. You know, we've got to be doing different rotations here. So alpha is going to vary. Now, alpha's probably not ever going to, well, we know alpha can't hit zero because the two circles can't intersect. But it's a very strange sort of foliation of the sphere.
If your zero line is on zero, then I mean, I'm stopping trusting anything, but that's okay.
Good.
It seems like I should, as you go away from it, it's going to vary just slightly because you're not...
Yeah.
So it looks like as you go away from it, it's slowly going to get bigger and bigger until it's getting close, but not quite that sphere's radius.
Yeah. So if phi naught is, say, infinitesimal, then this transformation has to be close to just a rotation around JZ. We can't get very far from that line. So, you know, presumably we're going to do something kind of nearby here, probably ending up at identified points. So these are all going to be circles that tread through the sphere.
Right.
You know, we're not getting any nice obvious loops. They're all the topologically nasty ones. Well, it looks like threads that run from one point onto the sphere somehow through the sphere to the opposite point. I mean, each coset is gonna be some thread through the sphere to the opposite point, which makes it a closed circle, right?
Right.
It is a circle, topologically a circle. It's really thready. That's right. Yeah, and none of them intersect. So this would drive a cat nuts.
Drive a cat.
Okay.
Let's see. So shall we figure out what else is? How are you guys doing? Teetering on the edge. You followed what we've done. Have you got questions? You know, I mean, we're just sort of figuring out a specific problem. But,
so the thread's a cross-section of the circle,
Each thread is a line that runs from one point on the surface of the circle, of the ball, through the interior of the ball and ends on the antipodal point from where it started.
None
of them can intersect.
Right.
Yeah, you have to actually be able to build this out of little pieces of thread without ever having them hit the same point.
Do they have like the same... Hey, are they like on the same plane? Or...
No. Okay, what we know is we have continuity in the group. So if we change phi naught a little, we're going to shift that curve a little bit. So, you know, varying phi naught, we can move through. Of course, you know, there are other things besides this phi naught. If this had been some different rotation there, the fixed part here, the fixed part is m. All right. The directions of all of these rotations are all directions orthogonal to this direction. Well, that's going to vary all over the map depending on what we choose for G. So which coset we're looking at. My sister. Touch to turn. Yeah. Hello? Excuse me, this time.
Hey? How you doing? Yeah. Ah, okay. Wow, okay. Yeah, well, she's got to think about it on her own. But, touchy how?
Just a lambda parameter.
Yeah, okay.
Lambda equals 1?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
What's that supposed to signify?
I
don't see any other lambda parameters.
I don't know. Yeah, all right, thanks.
So that's just a different reference.
Okay, can you send me the appropriate number?
Oh, it'd be as much as
one or the other. Just email me.
B, yes, forever, by some number. Basic on the meal.
Okay,
right, M hat, lambda.
My sister says hi.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Good. Why do I have 8 emails?
Pictures.
Junk. I've got some pictures on here. Sorry. My niece is out of the hospital. She's going for some pancreas stuff. She's out. That's good.
Let's see. So we can find alpha as a function of theta.
If
we
said that,
phi naught
is zero.
Phi naught going to zero means we're looking at the coset of the identity and boom, we found it.
Oh, okay.
So we know exactly what that one is.
Okay.
And if phi naught is small, that doesn't really say too much. Varying phi naught changes this orthogonal vector, changes the y component of that orthogonal vector, so it's going to sort of range over various values this way, so that plane will rotate around the x-axis. The plane in which m lies will rotate around like that. Any other questions? Let's make sure everybody understands what we've done. And
I didn't understand the introduction of lambda here.
We found a vector that is left alone by this transformation, so that vector lies along the axis. But for m, we want a unit vector. I didn't know how long that was going to be, so I just stuck a parameter here. All we know is it's in the direction of m. But the magnitude of that vector actually depends upon the magnitude of b. What I really want to do is choose b so that it is a unit vector, so that lambda is 1. So I want lambda equal 1.
Oh,
this choice of b does it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think for
general b, I need a factor here. But, if I choose b right, then lambda is 1. So I'm choosing b to make it a unit vector. Good? Yeah, so you divide by the norm of a vector, and it's a unit vector. The norm happens to be ugly.
So I see m hat, but l hat?
I've chosen L hat to be orthogonal to M hat for all values of theta. So even as M varies, as we move through the coset, M varies, because M depends on theta. But this particular vector with the zero first component here, that kills all the theta dependence and stays orthogonal. So there's exactly one vector that's orthogonal to all m of theta. And that tells us that the m of theta lie in a plane.
That's
for a fixed phi naught.
And L hat cross m hat is the axis of rotation? Or?
No, m hat is the axis
of
rotation.
The axis of rotation.
Yeah. Yeah, we just make a basis, and M cross L or L cross M would be perpendicular to both, and that's probably a good coordinate system to use for something or other. But M hat is the vector we wanted, but we're trying to understand which way M hat is theta points.
Okay.
and it varies by about, you know, it changes from up to down essentially as we vary theta through the full range. Then we could go back and we could figure out what alpha is. Remember that, you know, every one of these rotations has to be able to be written in that form where this is alpha depends on theta and m hat depends on theta. So each is some point in this ball. And we know that m hat undergoes some arc around the back side of this thing. But we don't know how far, what the radius is. Alpha is the radius at the point. So if we figure out alpha of theta, which knowing m, we could probably now do, let's see, how hard would it be likely to be? We know m, so we might be able to use that general form of the transformation to read off alpha by, you know, what do we have? We have the identity minus mi mj times cosine theta plus m dot j sine theta. Was that our general transformation? So then this theta is alpha. So if we wrote out this matrix, well, the ugly bit is going to be like MIMJ, where M is, so we take a product of that thing with itself. Well, we could do that. Then add this thing, which is also, it's not too bad. We could write that thing down. So we could write this all out in terms of cos alpha, and then compare the result to this, and hopefully read off the relationship, because they've got to be equal. It's just that it could be...
Alpha has to be equal to what?
Yeah. This matrix has to be of this form.
Oh, right.
So there's some alpha. It's going to depend on theta. But there's some alpha, and we found M.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, well, and there's the power series for the log, and we can do that. Probably the long way. It seems to me there might be something clever we could do. Anybody see anything clever to find alpha?
Hello, Morrison.
Maybe not. Particular values. So, you know, if we pick a theta, it shouldn't be too hard to find alpha. We know what m is at any given theta, so we could find that. And then with that particular m, let's see, is there a derivative? We had a particular fine knot, maybe. Uh,
Okay. Here's a way we might get it. L hat is orthogonal to M. If we let this rotation act on L hat, what do we get? So I get delta ij minus mi mj cos alpha lj. Well, the m dot l is zero, so that's equal to just l I cos alpha. The m hat dot j acting on l hat, what's that? So this is going to be zero m three minus m two m one. Oh yeah, j is essentially f on I j k. So m dot j is essentially m I. So this would be m I l j. So it's essentially this term is essentially m cross l, or unit vectors m cross l, and then dot j. Let's see, is that right? Or no, this is j. Sorry. So yeah, this thing. So then find alpha. So we get m cross l sine alpha. If we put l on the other side, contract l from both sides, then l dotted into that is zero. We get l squared cos alpha. So contracting l on both sides of this ought to give us cosine alpha.
I think it'll work. Have you got the pictures this way?
Let's see what happens if we do that. So, we've got Pij. If I put in Li, Lj, we claim that that's cos alpha. Where L is 0, then funny thing, 1 plus cos phi naught over sine phi naught and 1, right?
Oh, that's not so bad.
So we want to sandwich that into this matrix. So Li, Lj, Pij is, okay, so we've got an L over here, 0, 1 plus cos phi naught over sine phi naught and 1. And then this dotted into this side is going to give us 0 here, then we get minus sine theta times that number, 1 plus cos. Wait a minute. Let's call this something simple like A. Sorry, A naught. There. So we've got a certain constant here. A naught sine theta. Then this on the second one we get A naught cos phi naught cos theta minus sine phi naught. And then here we get A naught cos theta sine phi naught plus cos phi naught. This should all be cos alpha. And then that one goes away. We get an A naught times this one. So A naught squared cos phi naught cos theta minus A naught sine phi naught plus the bottom row A naught cos theta sine phi naught plus cos phi naught. So let's see, here we've got the cos theta part. So there's some stuff times cos theta, where the stuff, we've got a single a naught out front, and then we also have an a naught cos theta plus phi times sine phi, plus sine phi. So that's 1 plus cos phi naught over sine phi naught cos phi naught plus sine phi naught. And we can try and simplify that. And then we have these two terms, so cos phi naught minus a naught times sine is just 1 plus cos phi naught. Well, that's nice. Cos phi naught minus a naught times, so that cosine just goes away. That's nice. Alright. So a naught cos theta. Find a common denominator sign phi naught here. So we have 1 plus cos, nope, we have cos phi naught plus cos squared plus sine squared is 1. That's not so bad. Minus 1.
We good here?
Let's not erase that. Picture of the group, though. So, cosine alpha ought to be, let's bring this a naught inside. So we have cosine of theta times some stuff here. And it's 1 plus cos over sine. This is just a naught again. So it's just a naught squared cos theta minus 1. Okay, so what is a naught? It's this funny number, 1 plus cos over sine. Now, properly speaking, let's see, that's not really a unit vector, right? This is, you know, it shouldn't be over 1 plus a naught squared. Oops. We didn't make L a unit vector. So there's the normalization with a square root. So where would that have come? We would have the square of that. So we need all of this over 1 plus a naught squared. That looks a little better because this was looking too big. So cos alpha ought to be 1 plus a naught squared divided into a naught squared cos theta minus 1. So that's right, it's a naught squared plus 1. So that's going to be less than 1.
That's good.
So it could be a cosine. So the a naught is squared is reduced by cos theta. We're subtracting 1 instead of adding. Looks like it probably starts off negative. Although, let's see, what would, if phi naught is small, then that component's really big. Then a naught's really big. So if phi naught is small, we can neglect the 1, and the a naught cancels, and we just have theta is about equal to alpha. That's nice. So if phi naught is much less than 1, cos alpha is about equal to cos theta. As phi naught gets bigger, we get away. But what that means, right, as theta varies from minus pi to pi, we're going up the backside over here. But theta, theta is about equal to alpha, so alpha is ranging from zero, so we're near the origin. So a zero rotation around, let's see, where?
Which way did it?
M of 0 points, or M of plus pi is up that way, right? So we start up here with a zero rotation, and as we move in that plane, we're spiraling outward to the outside. So it looks like an ear in that plane. So remember, alpha is the radius in the group sample. So we start at the origin. We're in some plane this way. The radius increases as we come around.
Let me ask a math question.
Yeah.
L hat was defined this way, times 1 over root.
Yeah.
1 plus a squared. Over yeah. here, it's just 1 over...
I have two of them.
Oh, you know. Okay. So they got squared. I wondered where that...
And this makes sense. So, I think we're probably... probably didn't muck up too many findings, I guess. Let's see. Do we get out to the end? Oh, now wait a minute. How big does this get? Let's see, probably if theta goes to pi, it's minus one. That becomes minus one. For any a zero. Which means that alpha has to be pi. So it does get to the surface. So regardless of A0, when theta equals pi, alpha equals pi. And let's see. Minus pi. Oh, minus pi. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Let's see now. Where is... M of 0 is halfway around. These two extremes of that arc are at plus or minus pi. Those are on the surface. All right, I'm sorry. I've got the wrong picture. Let me draw a bigger picture. How about it? Let's try this again. So, here's... What does that sound for? Oh, I thought it was mine. And... So we've got right through pole to pole. That curve was what? Phi naught equals zero. That's the coset of the identity. Okay. Now. For the case we've been looking at, we're starting, okay, so we have m hat at pi, and then in the opposite direction here, this is m hat at minus pi, and there's some circle around like this, except it goes around the back, doesn't it? All right, let's go around the back. So there's some circle like that that gives us all the m hat. So there's m hat of zero here. Now, when theta is zero, we get a naught minus one over a naught squared plus one, and that is some finite fraction of one. So we pass a minimum. I bet that's a minimum point here. that point is a naught squared minus 1 over a naught squared plus 1 distance out. That distance out. But at plus or minus pi, plus or minus pi, this becomes minus 1, and we get minus 1, so alpha is what? Pi? Is it pi or minus pi? Are we approaching it? Let's see. Looks like it's going to be minus pi in both cases. Oh, plus minus pi are the same. So those are the extremes, and so it includes those two points, but it's in between. We're probably threading a curve sort of like that. So that is our coset g sub phi naught h. Crudely drawn.
Well, sort of the final coset ended up being sort of wobbly. But
so, you know, basically these things are going to move all over that sphere. This was a fairly generic case, so I think we're always going to see the coset going from one side to the other. That might actually be easy to show, because those cases correspond.